Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
This is part two of a discussion I had with Xavier Kwan, who was Chief Operations Officer and Chief People Person at Alibaba. In this podcast, we discuss about the growth of Alibaba, its ethics and dealings, and also how it dealt with the SARS pandemic in 2002 and 2003. In part one, we discussed about Xavier's change in his roles of being a senior executive in GE and BTR and being made redundant, and how he came across to get his role within Alibaba.
You and Jack came to an event that I was running in Henley, because we know each other through Henley Business School. I was running an event in Henley in 2004. This is just after SARS. And the whole experience that Alibaba went through with that SARS in 2002-2003. Give us an insight to that, because we're in the middle of it now, you know, all over the world, companies that are going through this, and you experienced this back 17, 18 years ago. So what was the experience of SARS then?
If you go back to the kind of the steps we took, is that we clean up the 360. Five people, we fired over two-thirds of them. We're down to 150. So that is how we stopped the burn. We are burning $2 million a month, and we are left with $10 million. So that is actually quite critical. So we did that in 30 days. So that is a very important thing. After we did that, then we will have to look for the business model. We didn't have a business model at all. But then as soon as we finish the reorganization and report the good news to the board was happy for about 2 seconds, a clap for 2 seconds, and said, great, well done. And then next was, when are you going to make money? Mm-hmm. We didn't even have a business model. So we then, after that, the three of us, Joe, Jack, and me, this is has a bearing, and that's why I'm going back to talk about this. Bear with me for a few seconds. We asked, this is a very key question. We said, should we give bribe? Completely sounds completely unrelated to what all the things we're doing. But we asked this question, this very key question, after the board meeting on the first day of February 2001. And then we step out on a very cold day in an unheated office, because we turn all the heating down so that we don't waste money. So we took a whole day for us to talk Jack into understanding what bribery means and what FCPA means, Foreign Corrupt Practice Act means, and so on. And Joe is got a JD from Yale. Is a lawyer, and I work for GE, you know, policy 20.4 and all that, very clear about FCPA and all this. And then Jack asked, we talked for one whole day, and Jack asked the key question, is if we give bribe and things go wrong, who goes to jail? Then Joe and I, very happy, pointed at him and said, you would go to jail. And I remember Jack said, if I went to jail, would you two guys come and visit me? And Joe and I laughed our heads off, because we told Jack, if it went so bad and you went to jail, I think Xavier and Joe are going to be in there waiting for you to get it. So we actually come to a very clear understanding of one of the key company value is no bribing, integrity. Yeah. And we have many other company values also, like customer number one, today's top performance, tomorrow's minimum requirement, and all those things.
But I've known you for years, and your integrity, and also following Alibaba for years, the integrity that I feel comes through, it gets accused for fake goods and gets accused for sort of practices. Yeah. But that's not what I see in what Jack and what Alibaba really tries to drive.
Yes, trying very hard. It's a microcosm of China. So we have thousands of people at Ali doing nothing but stamping out those fake goods.
Yeah.
Every day, that is all they do. But that is a another very big subject to talk about. But this value system that we have is that beginning with the mission of let's make doing business easy. And our target customers are the business people, and customer being number one.
Yeah.
And all have a very strong bearing on the pandemic at that time. That was SARS. So SARS happened just right after we went broken even in 2002. So after firing all these people, we got, you know, all the money burned down to 500,000, and we still left with 9 million. But we still have to find a business model that actually works. But because we have no bribing, we quickly, in quick steps, in a matter of months, found out all the product that did not work. Why? Because it all require bribing.
Right.
The only one product that actually is to help the SME company to export.
Yeah.
Then we suddenly realize after several months of all the other things not working, we exit all those other business because we refuse to bribe. Then we are, our target customer is not the company. If your target customer is the company, people in the company still ask you to bribe them.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
But we suddenly realize our target customer should not be the company. Our target customer should be the SME bosses,
right,
the owners of the company.
Yeah.
If you target them, then there is no bribe.
Yeah.
Because they would not ask people to bribe them because they own the whole company anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is how we actually got the whole thing to a kickstart, with people targeting the owners of the company, selling them the a China supplier to helping them to export to America, to the Western world, and so on and so forth. So that actually helped us broke even in 2002. Then we were looking for the scale. You know, we're looking to go, I think we were $10 million sales in 2002, and we broke even. And completely, you know, the whole year we broke even. Then we're looking at making this 50 million, 100 million, and that kind of thing. But then SARS came about. You know, like no sooner had you gone through one crisis of breaking even and ha ha ha, you know, you're still alive, and then you're pushing off to scaling. Then suddenly scaling became almost like fatigue. Because look, you know, would people still be doing business with the SARS pandemic all over China?
Yeah.
Then little did we know that in fact the reverse is true. Because of the pandemic, nobody wants to meet anybody. So they suddenly realized that the internet is the way to go in terms of doing business in China.
Yeah, yeah. And so this, of course, we have to remember was the time, 2002, there was basic web browsing, basic websites, basic email, but we didn't have the stuff we've got now with Zoom and Teams and
WhatsApp,
and you know, mobile phones and sort of stuff like that. You know, this was back in the basics, and you were in lockdown, as we've been in lockdown around the world, couldn't go out, you had to shut your offices.
Yeah. So this is quite fantastic because we had a team at the Canton Trade Fair. The spring fair was like in March or something. And then that was the SARS is already happening in Canton province.
Yeah.
So when we came back, we did all the normal things the government asked us to do, is to everybody quarantine for 2 weeks. And then we went about our normal business after the quarantine. But one of our employees, who was the leader of the team to set up the exhibition in the Canton Trade Fair, she was having a fever. So she was still having a flu-like fever. So everybody was very sensitive. Did he get SARS? And then we sent her to see the specialist, and several specialists, they all say no, she didn't get SARS because there's a different between upper track and lower track, things should definitely clear. This should not get sacked. But the government was very worried because the government in Hangzhou has got one other or two other cases of suspected SARS.
Right.
So then they were worried that me, a young lady might be the third case. So we had actually 6 hours of advance warning that they're about to shut us down because they're going to take this young lady into the quarantine hospital.
Yeah.
Not a quarantine center, but a hospital. And that also means because we, the whole company, all 600 of us at the headquarters are kind of been in contact with her. They're going to quarantine all of us for 2 weeks at home.
Yeah.
Forced quarantine at home. So, but three weeks before that was happened. In fact, we got our staff coming to me saying that, Savio, I want 2,000 RMB from the company. I said, why? And then they will say, well, because I think we better get prepared to work from home because they might shut us down if they think Kitty, this is the young lady's name, is actually a SARS suspect.
Yeah.
So I said, okay. So I gave them the money. So I was handing out over 300,000 RMB. That's a lot of money for us at the time.
Yeah.
For hundreds of people who all trying to buy something and get ready to work from home, all completely and utterly self-directed.
Yeah.
Voluntary. And so when the order came down from the authority to say that you're all going to be shut down, our engineers had the smart to build a platform where all the phone calling into the company are directed on the platform. And anybody can pick up from that platform and answer any phone call that comes in.
So
all 600 people can answer the phone call. So suddenly we are all locked up.
Yeah.
They basically locked up because there was a lock outside our door.
Yeah.
And open three times a day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner delivery, and two times a day for the people from the hospitals, from the Ministry of Health, to go and spray disinfectant.
Yeah, yeah.
To disinfect the whole place with against germs and viruses.
Yeah, and the thing that people need to get their head around is this is 18 years ago.
Yes.
China went through this experience and Alibaba took its business to e-commerce, working remotely. This is 18 years of experience and knowledge that China had built up and lots of Asia had built up to be ready for this pandemic. And also that it's had some others and that along the way. And that isn't it?
Yeah, it was amazing. In fact, everybody was being locked away for 14 days. And some innocent people who actually happened to just share the flat with us, with our employees. Sorry, you're sharing the flat with the Alibaba people, you got locked away. And some are parents, and some are husband, and some are wives, spouse. They're all locked away.
Yeah.
So what can Jack and I do? Nothing, because we were into like no management can handle anything like that. Everybody was handling themselves. But all we can do is Jack and I had the telephone numbers of everybody. So we keep calling everybody every day.
Yeah.
I think I must have made 300 or 400 phone calls a day.
Yeah, yeah.
To everybody. And all I can say to them is that this is Savio. I just want to make sure that you know we're here for you and thank you for helping the company. And then they would be very happy and you will hear them answer the phone and say, Alibaba, ni hao. So this is an angelic voice. And then they start helping people over the phone. And I call everybody every day for 2 weeks. And one day I call a young lady and I did not get an angelic voice answering. I get a baritone answering, Alibaba, ni hao. So I say, who the hell is this? I say, sir, I am Alibaba. And if you have a problem, let me know. I can help you fix it. If you can't get through to our service or you have a problem, I can help you. And then as I hesitated, he started ranting out what he can do. And if you have this problem, you can press that button and that button how to overcome it and all that. I said, wow, how he definitely knows Alibaba, but he's definitely not an Alibaba person. So I told him, I said, I'm Samuel. I said, oh, our daughter is up there with his mother, working on the internet, on the computer to help somebody solve another problem. I'm just answering the phone for her.
Yeah. So everybody, I can tell you,
I cried.
Yeah,
I burst out crying because, wow, this is what's happening. So after all this episode is finished, because nobody realized the whole of Alibaba headquarters has been locked down away from office and working from home for two weeks.
Yeah.
And then I asked everybody, I said, how come you guys have the foresight to ask for money to set up for working from home? And how come you are answering the phone call? You can just all have a holiday. Then the whole company would have gone bankrupt. Then they say, well, do you know, Savio, what is our company's, one of our company's value is customer number one.
Yeah.
And our mission is to let's make doing business easy. So we can be locked down, but our service to our customers should not be interrupted. Yeah. As simple as that. And that is why we're doing everything we can, working from home, answering the calls and so on, to make sure everybody is satisfied and helped. So in that period of SARS, that month, I think our traffic went up 7 times.
Right, right.
Our cash profit went up 5 times.
Yeah.
That actually was the scaling we needed. We're looking for scaling.
Yeah.
And it was delivered in the at the back of a pandemic.
Yeah. Oh, fascinating. Savio, fantastic.
The rest is
look, I've been delighted with this conversation. You've gone through your career, how you had the resilience and that to network and find then this new economy role and that within Alibaba, which very different to your previous BTR and GE role. And then completely the experience different. You and the Alibaba team went through with SARS 18 years ago, and I think it gives us a lot of hope for, you know, people that are going through this transition now and companies that are going to go through a lot of transition, not a lot of new economy stuff that's going to come along. I think it's fascinating.
Yes. In fact, we now have portfolio companies that we work with. Some of them, in particular, one of them is doing medical, healthcare over the internet.
Yeah.
They had the biggest internet hospital in China. Yeah. And one thing that is actually completely changed the whole model. They were doing this because they were still doing on offline services. But because of the pandemic, suddenly nobody was going to want to see a doctor face to face. In fact, nobody want to go near a hospital. The last thing they want is to go near a hospital. So suddenly everybody was actually using their platform to talk to and to be diagnosed by a doctor remotely.
Yeah.
And so much so that the government, some of the provincial government health authorities actually decided to let them be compensated by the Ministry of Health cover.
Yeah.
So the cover actually pay for a remote diagnosis and remote consultation, which previously was not allowed.
And what we're seeing now, I was in Hangzhou in October, and I was actually visiting a startup business which is doing unmanned stores and doing robot deliveries and that. It was actually, I met them on the Alibaba head office, the first Alibaba head office thing, which is the buildings are laid out in Jack's name. And
Yeah.
And I visited there and seeing that fascinating fascinating implementation. Another one I saw was doing facial recognition for hotel check-ins, yep. So you don't have to meet yep. people. And now with the people I'm in contact with in China, these businesses are going mm-hmm. through that sort of pandemic upkick in that as well. This new economy technology and business models, we're seeing another wave of it coming, I think, all over the world, but at different phases.
Yes, I think we have another example of people who are making unmanned aircraft. So these the aircraft for agricultural use.
Yeah.
To spray and to fertilize and then to fumigate and all that. It's now yeah. all done remotely just
yeah.
by this little kind of aircraft that was flying all over the places. According to your remote control, so many examples of that.
Yeah,
and even fintech is doing that.
Yeah, yeah, lots of change.
You can do investment over the internet.
Yeah, look, Savio, it's been really good. Thanks so much for your time in sharing this on our video and on our podcast. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure, Andrew.
Please do subscribe for future podcasts. And if you like this broadcast, please give it a 5-star rating on iTunes or the platform that you listened on. Thank you.